From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 15th day of May 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. The Ohio State University's ag economist Carl Zuloff will be here to take up agricultural policy and what's happening with the Farm Bill in Washington, D.C. And then we'll discuss the Indy 500 with Scott Williamson. We'll call him over in Indianapolis. And as we close out our program, Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming will be here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures finished with the nearby contract and the July soft red winter wheat up 10 and a quarter cents at $6.08 and a half. September at $6.22 and a quarter in Chicago, up 9 and a half, and the hard red in Kansas City for the day finished 13 cents higher at $6.27 and a half. From the corn pit back in Chicago, July futures $5.97 and a quarter, up 14 and a quarter. July contracts are the lead option now that the May has expired. Corn September at $5.23, up 8 and a half, and December for the day at $5.14 and a half, up 9. March corn at $5.26 and a half, up 9 and a half, and the May at $5.34 and three quarters, up 9 cents. July of next year, $5.42 and a quarter, up 8 and three quarters. December of next year at $5.26 and a half in the corn pit, up 3 and a half cents. July soybeans today, a gain of 26 cents, up $14.13. August at $13.93 and three quarters, up 21. September at $13.40, up 13 and a quarter. And November beans at $13 and a nickel, up 10 and a quarter for your harvest month. January futures, $13.02 and a half, up 8 and a half. And the March contract in the bean pit at $12.74, a nickel higher on the afternoon. Bean meal finished July at $4.17.20, up $13.70. And bean oil up 17 cents at $51.47. Live cattle futures finished the August at $118.72 and a half. Up 27 and a half, the October at 123.65, up 50 cents, and the August feeder cattle, 157.67 and a half, up 47 and a half cents. September there at 159.15, up 65. July lean hogs, $87.40, up $1.87 and a half, and August at $87.70, up $1.95 for the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil trading at $93.59 a barrel, $1.19 lower. Ethanol at $2.12.7, that's 2 4/10 cents higher. Natural gas up 6 8/10 cents to $2.49 9/10. And the heating oil on the day, that's just about unchanged at $2.92 8/10. That's, of course, diesel fuel. And gold futures at $1,556.80 an ounce, down $3.80. The U.S. dollar, a big gain today, up 0.61 at 81.22. And the CRB index at 289.14, up 0.69 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 83 degrees on a west wind at 13 miles an hour. That should gust all the way to 16. And then tonight, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m., partly cloudy. A low of 56 on a west-northwest wind at 9 to 11, gusting as high as 15. Chance of precipitation this evening set at 20%. Mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 76. On a northeast wind at 14 miles an hour, gusting to 17. Wednesday, mostly clear and 48. Thursday, that's Wednesday night, that is. Thursday, during the day, sunny, a high of 78 degrees. Thursday night, partly cloudy and a low of 57. Friday, sunny and 83. Friday night, partly cloudy and 64. Saturday, mostly sunny and 85 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy and 67. Sunday, partly sunny and 85 degrees. Sunday evening, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a low of 63. And on Monday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms continues. It'll be partly sunny, though, with a high near 75 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour comes to us from Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On the phone line now to take up the agricultural futures markets for Tuesday afternoon is Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
It was quite the turnaround Tuesday, and it appears to me in the marketplace there's lots to talk about for the prices to move a bit higher. What'd you see?
Well, I think we did see a nice turnaround. It seems like, number one, we maybe got to an oversold condition in these grains. We come down awfully hard in the last week, 10 days in these grains. Then number two, we had a little bit of positive news out of Germany, their GDP growing a little bit, the consumer confidence being a little better in the U.S. And, of course, as we look, we start to talk a little bit about weather and dryness, and NOAA helped us a lot along the way with that. Today we're seeing 44 out of the lower 48 have some areas of the states here that have drought conditions. So that, along with the Chinese and Russian areas, was experiencing some extreme droughts over there in some of their crops, give us a little update.
Speaking of the Chinese, it appears that they might have been dabbling in the marketplace, sniffing around for maybe some July and August delivery for soybeans.
You know, there's I didn't see confirmations, but there was definitely talk about it on all the news wires. So if they did, they snuck it by. Without
oh, no,
me seeing
I just
it.
Saw the rumors is all.
Just the rumors, okay. yes, and they've been in there, and that's just a little bit surprising because one of the little headlines they like to stick out there this morning was that their crush margins went slightly negative. But they were here looking pretty hard at this strong dip in the market, I think.
And then wheat leading things a bit higher on ideas that Ukraine and Russia might have some problems with dryness.
Ukraine and Russia, dryness, and not as good a wheat crop. And then also, we did see the wheat ratings drop in yesterday's report also. And, it's a little bit funny, and not funny as in humorous, but funny as they said that the one state dropped, but the other two neighboring states that were having the same dry problems, they left the ratings the same. So they thought maybe the ratings would drop again next week.
What'd you think of the rally in the dollar today?
Yeah, the rally in the dollar was especially impressive when you look at it came even with the greens rallying. And that's one of the things that might put a little cap on our rebounding here is that dollar continues to stay strong. But that was basically the consumer confidence vote and things a little better that way. And also, of course, Greece couldn't come to agreement on their coalition government, and they're going to have some more elections to see here next month. So still way up in the air, but a lot of worry about Greece.
Too early to worry about the dollar and inflation on that one, just kind of a reaction to Greece? Or
I think we're okay for that right now. I mean, we've been up in the 80 bracket. Now, this is as high as we've been for a long time, but I don't think inflation's running quite rampant yet.
What else do you see in the marketplace we ought to discuss for the afternoon?
Well, I think that, we, as listen to Commodity Week, we are hearing a lot that the weather for pollination time period is going to be big. And there's a lot of news wires putting out that the last 2 weeks of June and the first 2 weeks of July, and whether we have QE3 again is really whether this market's going to take off and make some lot better markets for later in the summer.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go?
That's about it for today, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much, Wayne.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Hey, I'd like you to visit our website at willag.org and then look just right under the picture of Dave and me, and you'll find a brand new bus tour trip that we have scheduled, hopefully, to go in the month of August, the 20th through the 24th, to the Gulf of Mexico. And we'll visit the CGB Enterprises Export Facility in Mexico, in the Gulf of Mexico, but in New Orleans. It's in Convent, Louisiana, so we'll visit that. And on the way down, there is a rail and river export terminal that belongs to CGB on the Ohio River. We'll visit that one, too. We'll talk with Dan Zwicker along the way, and we'll meet with John Bondurant. Should be a really good trip. Check out all the details and make sure you get back to us if you'd like to go. Or if you like the idea of going, just get back to me and say, eh, it's too late in the year, but we sure would like the chance and opportunity to head down and see where the corn goes. We call it our Follow the Corn bus tour. You know, yesterday afternoon I told you that Scott Williamson from Mahomet, Illinois, a native there, had been in Indianapolis at the 500 setting up for the race and hoping to qualify a car with a company that he co-owns with Fan Force United. Scott's on the phone line now from Indianapolis to talk about his experience there. Scott, thanks so much for taking the time. You're first and AgriGold seedsman, and part of the reason that AgriGold underwrites on our programming, thank you for that. But you have an interesting backstory now with the Indianapolis 500. I guess it started out because you're just a huge fan of the race. Is that right?
I am, Todd. Yeah, that's right. Back in the early 70s, St. Joe resident, best friend's dad, Harlan Dickerson, took me to my first Indy 500, and as one might say, it was love at first sight. I fell in love with the sport and have just been a very active fan for, you know, many years. And, oh, I started utilizing racing to entertain some of our good customers at AgriGold, going to the track and getting some VIP credentials and that kind of thing. And there was a race team that started up about 5 years ago, and we moved from going to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and utilizing the suite to actually getting down in pit lane with the team and going to some of the other tracks that they raced at, and got to know these guys really well. And back in December of 2010, they decided to kind of reorganize their team a little bit. And a couple of their part, there were four partners at the time, and two of the partners decided to get disinvolved themselves with the team, and they were looking for a third, and they were good enough to offer it to me, and I couldn't pass it up. And that was an Indy Lights effort. That was not an IndyCar effort. And so that started in January of 2011. We did not raise any sponsorship money at all in 2011. And consequently, the car sat in storage all year long. We never got to the racetrack. And fortunately, on Thanksgiving Day this past year in 2011, we signed a season-long deal with a young man out of India, Arman Ibrahim, who is a very successful race car driver, drove all over Asia and Europe. He's 22 years old, has aspirations to drive in the Indy 500. And that was a season-long deal. We've had three races so far. About 6 weeks ago, we signed a deal with Olivia Newton-John's nephew, Emerson Newton-John, to do a one-race deal here at Indianapolis in the Indy Lights race. And that's called the Freedom 100. And that takes place the Friday before the Indianapolis 500. And then kind of out of the blue, an opportunity fell into our lap. Would actually be a week ago this past Saturday to negotiate an opportunity to enter an IndyCar into the Indianapolis 500. And that whole deal went together in about 20 hours. And it took about 40 hours to build the car. We've got an amazing crew put together. AgriGold has been very generous with giving me a little bit of flex time to get after this thing. They know this; it's a passion of mine. And here we are. We've passed all the rookie orientation, and we're ready to qualify on Saturday.
Holy smokes, that is just an unbelievable story. What's it like to be at the Indy 500, looking to qualify and being an owner? I cannot imagine what you're feeling.
It's humbling, Todd. I mean, there are people around me that I've followed all my life as a fan. It's just very humbling. I have two fantastic partners. Tyce Carlson drove in two 500s himself, 1997 and 1999, and I don't think he ever ran a full season in IndyCar, but I think he had about 30 starts. And he's been very close to the sport ever since. He's been trying very hard to put a team together. He's the one that started the first team that I got involved with, and the team now that, of course, that I'm associated with. And he's very, very well-liked within the IndyCar community. And when they found out that he had a deal, there were a lot of people that stepped up to say, hey, I want to be on your crew. I want to help in any way I can. And then Chris Williams is my other partner, who is also a fantastic individual. former professional golfer from California, but played in Australia, never made it to the PGA in the U.S., but has a sports marketing background. He's a financial planner, estate planner by profession. There's a gentleman out of Vail, Colorado, Jason Peters, who is also part of our ownership of this one race deal for the IndyCar, who helped us basically make the connection that made this thing work. So I've got great partners, and the partners are very well thought of within the IndyCar community, and hence have been able to put a terrific team together. And we've got some people coming across from our Indy Lights effort as well to help out. So it's really a neat group of people.
I would be amiss if I didn't bother to mention to ask you just a little bit about the E85 effort that the Indy Racing League has for the 500.
Yes, I really haven't got a lot of information there. Obviously, being in the seed corn business, working for AgriGold and AgriLiant Genetics, that's an important part of my world. And what I can tell you is that every IndyCar and every race this year is going to run E85. And as I told a friend of mine, I've never smelled exhaust from E85 smell any better than coming out of a Indianapolis race car. It smells pretty good.
Okay. Hey, good luck qualifying, and thanks so much. And we can call you in future dates to see how you're doing.
Absolutely. Feel free to call anytime. Appreciate it.
That's Scott Williamson with the Indy Light Racing Team FanForce United. You can find them online at fanforceunited.com. Look for them on Twitter and Facebook as well.
From Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
This is the Closing Market Report. Carl Zuloff, an ag economist at The Ohio State University, is on the phone line this afternoon to take up a posting that will be put on the Farm Doc Daily website within the next few hours. It is about the Farm Bill and, in this case, crop insurance. Dr. Zuloff, thank you for taking the time. You're looking at a particular part of the Farm Bill and a new crop insurance product, or one that's been in the Farm Bill since 2008 but will be made permanent. Is that right?
This is Todd. Good afternoon. Nice to be here. This is the supplemental coverage option, and this is the first time it has been in the Farm Bill, at least in the Senate version of the Farm Bill. Of course, we've got to wait and see whether it makes it through to the final Farm Bill, but the supplemental coverage option is a potentially major extension of insurance options that producers will want to look at. What it does is it allows the individual producer or farmer to supplement his individual crop insurance with a county or what's also called an area crop insurance product to cover part or all of the deductibles. So, for example, if I as a farmer bought 75% insurance as an individual, I would be able to cover part of the deductible above 75% with the county insurance product.
When you look at it, is it a product as designed at this point that would be worthwhile?
I think that farmers will find it very worthwhile to look at this option. Whether they choose it or not will depend upon their own particular situation. But it's an attractive option, and therefore one that people should look at for the following reasons. First of all, it will match up with your individual insurance product. So if you buy a yield insurance product, the SCO will also be a yield insurance product. If you buy revenue insurance with the harvest price option, the SCO will be a revenue insurance harvest price option at the county, but not at the farm, but it matches up. So there's this matching up of the product. And I would also mention that if you buy it without the harvest price option, it will also match up there. The coverage will vary depending on whether you are in the Agricultural Risk Coverage Program, which is another program in the Farm Bill. But if you are not in the AACR program, the ARC program, or the Agricultural Risk Coverage Program, your deductible at the county level will disappear, and I think that will be an attractive option for some producers. But I think if you are in the Agricultural Risk coverage program, in which case it will cover losses that are greater than 21% up to your individual insurance coverage level. So if you buy 75%, it will cover from 75 to 79% of your losses. It will be useful for, I think, counties in the Midwest that have low variability to think about, do I want to buy an individual insurance and then add the county insurance product to it under the SCO option? So I think what this really does in the scheme of things, Todd, is it gives farmers a lot more options to customize risk management to their individual situation. And risk is something that varies by crop, it varies by region, it varies by farm, and any kind of increase in flexibility of addressing that actually allows you to develop a better risk management program.
Can you define what the risk in this case is? You say it's the deductible, but what does that mean in terms of crop insurance?
Okay, what this is, and this is kind of complex, and it is probably hard unless you go through examples with people, Todd, but basically, if I buy, let's say, 75% individual insurance for my farm, I can then complement that with an SCO policy. And if I am not in ARC, and I know there's a lot of conditions here, but if I'm not in ARC, and there's at least a 10% loss at the county level, then at the county level, I will start receiving payments for all losses which are less than zero. In other words, what my guarantee is for all losses that are for the guarantee. So what that means is my 10% deductible, in a sense, disappears at that point because I can receive payments for all losses, not just for the 10%, and that's what we mean by disappearing deductible. Now, I want to emphasize that this is losses at the county level. This is not losses on the individual farm. But so this is the complementarity between the individual products and the county products.
We have just about a minute and a half left. How does it affect the budget, and is the premium expensive or not?
The premium, there will be a premium, as there are with any crop insurance product. The premium subsidy, which is the share of the premium that will be paid by the government, is 70%, at least in the current legislation. So the farmer would pay 30% of the premium. So obviously, the premium is an important consideration. It will vary depending on how variable the county yield is. The more variable the county yield and revenue is, the higher the premium. But there is a fairly significant premium subsidy on this product also.
Thank you so much, Carl.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Carl Zuloff is with The Ohio State University, serves as an ag economist. You can find his writings on the Farm Doc Daily website later on the supplemental crop insurance products.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In just a couple minutes, I'll be back and we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. In the mean space, please do visit our website at willag.org and look up our Follow the Corn tour.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgro on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
It's St. Isidore the Farmer Day. patron of agricultural workers, livestock, and ranchers. On this day in agricultural history in 1803, Sir Arthur Thomas Cotton was born. A British engineer, his life work was constructing irrigation and dams for water shortages in southern India, saving thousands from famine and promoting the local economy. Cotton also founded the Indian School of Hydraulic Engineering. In 1858, Robert Hare died, an American chemist. He devised the first oxyhydrogen blowpipe, the ancestor of the modern welding torch. Hare's blowpipe could melt sizable quantities of platinum, and largely on the strength of his invention, Hare was awarded honorary degrees from both Yale and Harvard. In 1923, Listerine was registered as a trademark. Before it was a mouthwash, it was a surgical antiseptic, and its name comes from Dr. Joseph Lister, a pioneer of antiseptic surgery. In 1940, nylon stockings went on sale for the first time in the U.S. in Wilmington, Delaware. 4 million pair were sold in several hours. And in 1989, Hershey reduced the size of its chocolate bar to 1.55 ounces. The price remained 40 cents. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's Tuesday afternoon, Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Now joins us to look at what I think is probably a pretty good forecast if you're wanting the crops to grow or wanting to continue to plant soybeans in our part of the world. Don, what do you see over the next week?
Well, I think you summed it up nicely because it's a weather pattern that for the second half of May is actually about on track. Temperatures across the Corn Belt, most of the Midwest, areas east of the Mississippi will be pretty close to normal, maybe slightly above in the Corn Belt area, but temperatures about where they should be. And we have, especially in the forecast for next week, some shower and thunderstorm activity that will come across the Corn Belt. But it's not a pattern that's excessively wet either. But the frequency, the opportunity for occasional shower and thunderstorm activity that can bring beneficial rains is in the forecast. So it is a good-looking forecast. It has a little bit of everything, but it doesn't have any extremes, which as you get into late May, heading into early June, that's something good to see.
And when you look a bit further out and think about what's happening to the west of us, is there anything that might tell you we would have a drier or wetter than normal summer at this point?
Well, right now, no. I would think that the trends that we're seeing, if there's going to be anybody that's going to be drier than normal, it looks to be some of those western areas. The western plain states are pretty dry. You get into the western half of Nebraska, western half of Kansas, those areas and points west, they run the biggest risk of a warmer, drier summer. From what we're seeing, at least at the moment, Midwest Corn Belt looking at things very close to where they should be. At least the projections after 90 days are fairly close to normal, both with precipitation and temperature.
Is that a good statement from the east side to the west side of the Corn Belt?
It pretty much is, yes. There's no signal right now, no strong signal of an excessively dry or wet summer season.
Take up the winter wheat growing regions. Are there any problems there in the United States?
Well, they could use some rain. Some of that winter wheat country of Colorado, Nebraska, Kansas could use some rain, although some areas of Kansas, some areas of Colorado have done a little bit better with rainfall, but I would pinpoint some areas of Nebraska, northern Colorado, northwest Kansas as areas that could really use a shot of rain. Some areas of the Texas Panhandle as well, although Texas, many areas of Texas have picked up some good rains. There are still some dry pockets, especially in those western areas.
Other growing regions in the northern hemisphere, start with China, please.
Looks pretty good. China's weather really not that different than what we're expecting here. Precipitation is going to be fairly uniform across the key growing areas of China. And when we look at temperature conditions, not far from normal. Again, so China and the U.S., pretty common pattern right now for both areas.
And then winter wheat in Ukraine and in France.
Those areas
looking at better chances of rain. In fact, France has got really good chances for rain here over the next week. So they're looking a little bit better. Now, as we go a little bit further east, as we go through some areas of the Ukraine, they're sort of on the edge of what is a drier pattern that is extending a bit into Russia. Although, compared to where they've been for the last week or two, it's a forecast that is a little more moist for those areas.
Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that wraps up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can always find us online at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.